This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Good almost afternoon here in the city of Chicago. Welcome on into White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Mellor, getting you set for White Sox and Blue Jays. We have made it through the first half of the season with the Midsummer Classic, the All-Star break, having been this previous week, and the White Sox last night picked up right where they left off at the end of the first half with a thumping of the Blue Jays on the national TV spot. They were the Apple TV game last night, and the White Sox came out of the break after finishing the Athletics off, sweeping them at Wrigley Field, bouncing back nicely from that tough series against the red hot Red Sox, by the way. If you hadn't noticed, if you were a Sox fan who was extremely disappointed with the White Sox performance against the Red Sox back at Wrigley Field. By the way, that was the first series loss that the White Sox had at home in 11 tries. So if you were thinking, what's it? Because I fielded quite a few calls from angry White Sox fans about the performance by the White Sox against the Red Sox because the offense scuffled. Well, the Red Sox have still not lost since that series. They've won 11 in a row, and they have actually crawled their way out of the depths, and they have now found themselves back at 500. So that Red Sox series, all of a sudden, not looking nearly as bad as it did a little over a week ago. And again, the White Sox responded in kind against the Athletics with a sweep, and then they come right out of the All-Star break with a great performance last night. We'll talk a little bit later during the show about the All-Star festivities. I want to touch on that, of course, because the White Sox had three representatives. And oh, by the way, in about 10 minutes, Tristan Peters, who was there in attendance, will join me as he gets set for today's action. But of course, he had a wild, let's call it, 8-9 days, you know, going back to hitting a cycle against the Kansas City Royals and then learning the next day, less than 12 hours later, that he was going to be participating in the All-Star game. He's going to join me again about 10 minutes from right now. But yes, we'll hit on a lot of the All-Star stuff. We will also let you hear from the White Sox top selections in the amateur draft, which took place last Saturday, right when we were done wrapping up with White Sox Weekly. Of course, the Sox selected Rock Chalowski with the first overall pick. They followed that up with Landon Tomy with the 34th selection, son of Hall of Famer Jim Tomy. Might have heard of him, Sox fans. So we've got a lot on tap today. And we've got Tristan Peters. We're going to let you hear from Rock Chalowski. We're going to let you hear from Landon and Jim Tomy. And also Jesse Rogers, who was in the room where it happens. Jesse Rogers was in the White Sox final meeting before they went and made the selection of Rock Chalowski. He wrote a fantastic piece on ESPN.com. It was published, I believe, on Tuesday morning. So if you have not seen it by now, I would recommend White Sox fans go out and check it out because it is well worth your time. Jesse's going to hop on right around noon, and we're going to talk about what it was like for him to watch Chris Getz, Mike Shirley, David Keller, and everybody inside the White Sox organization, Ryan Fuller, all the key players have that conversation and what Jesse took from it. It certainly was a fantastic read. So Jesse's going to hop on around noon. So plenty in store, but quickly, let's recap what happened last night if you missed it. White Sox, again, picking up right where they left off, starting in the second with Kyle Teal bringing home the first run of the ballgame.
There's a swing and a flare, and it's a fair ball. Left field, base hit. Montgomery scores. Benintendi will end up at third. It's a bloop double for Kyle Teal, and the Sox lead 1-0 in the second.
What I love, too, about this team is that they frequently do not settle for just one run.
The 0-1. There's a ground ball to the shortstop, and the throw's going to go to third. A run's going to score. They've got Teal caught in a rundown, and they get him.
However, it was 2-0 at that point. And to that point about not settling, with two outs, Chase Meidroth coming through with a big two-out single.
2-2 is pounded on the ground towards center, a base hit. Montgomery scores. It's 3-0.
And Sam Antonacci, the very next hitter, comes up and puts the game in a spot where the White Sox would not really look back.
The pitch hit high in the air out into right, and it is gone. A towering, majestic two-run homer for Sam Antonacci. So there's the slug, 5-0.
Well, I guess he'd seen enough of the soft stuff. He said, you know what, it's time to make this guy pay.
How about the power from Sam Antonacci of late, his 7th home run of the season so far? Now, the Blue Jays tried to make it a ball game as George Springer would bring home a run. Luis Arias would hit a solo home run all of a sudden to make it 5-2 just as they were trying to make it a ball game. The White Sox offense came alive again. Colson Montgomery with the bags juiced, a bases-clearing double.
The kick and the 2-2. There's a swing and a line drive, base hit, left center field. Meidroth scores. Antonacci right behind him. Murakami to third. He's going to be sent. And he will score from first base. That is a bases-clearing double for Colson Montgomery, and it's 8-2.
Couple of solo home runs by George Springer and Brandon Valenzuela, and the Blue Jays tried, again, they kept trying to make it a ball game at 8-4 at that point. You still felt comfortable, but the White Sox, you love the way they play baseball. They just will not stop. Will Venable has called it on numerous occasions the team's superpower. And again, with the bases loaded, a Montgomery cleared the bases, but this time it was the other Montgomery.
The set and the pitch. A swing and a line drive toward the corner and right. It's a fair ball. Vargas scores. Colson Montgomery is in. Here comes Randall Grichuk, and he will score. And Braden ends up at third. It might be a triple. It's a bases-clearing extra base hit. It's 11-4.
First big league triple of his career for Braden Montgomery, and he tied his career high with 4 RBIs last night. He had 4 RBIs last Sunday when the White Sox went into the break, and he comes out of the break tying that career high. Pretty cool. Tristan Peters would add a sacrifice fly, and the White Sox would go on to win this one 12-4. Tyler Schweitzer picks up the win. He came on to finish the game off with 3 innings. Anthony Kay only able to go 4 yesterday as he struggled a little bit with his control. He had a couple of hit by pitches and walked 3. Did go 4 though, so enough with the big lead for the White Sox to lean on Trevor Richards, Sir Anthony Dominguez, and as I noted, Tyler Schweitzer, 3 scoreless innings. He was given the rare win by the scorekeeper when the White Sox already had a lead. He came in the 6th and finished it out for the White Sox with the, he came in the 7th and closed it out in the 7th, 8th, and 9th and did not get a save, but did get his first career win. So, good way for the White Sox to start it out. But, as I noted, lots going on this past week. The All-Star Game, the festivities. Tristan Peters was on hand to experience it all. Can you imagine me saying at the start of the season, Tristan Peters will be representing the White Sox at the All-Star Game, along with 2 of his teammates? It certainly still seems unbelievable. Sox fans, head to the ballpark on Saturday, July 25th as the White Sox take on the Astros at 6:10. 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a City Connect basketball warm-up presented by Wintrust. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. The All-Star Tristan Peters joins me next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Stream the games live on the ESPN Chicago app.
Hit on the ground to first, off the glove of Meneses. It'll kick into right. Benintendi's going to score. That was a one-hop screamer that Meneses just could not handle. I'm guessing it'll be a base hit. He hits a fly ball out into right center, and it's down for a base hit. Peters digging hard for 2. Here comes the throw back in by Bolte. It's late, and it's a double. Peters hits a high deep drive out into right center field, way back there. She's going to go. A two-run homer, Tristan Peters. Pitches. Swinging a ground ball, fair. Right field corner. Benintendi scores. Peters on his way to third. Here's the throw. Safe. He's hit for the cycle. Can you believe it?
What an unbelievable 8-9 days, we'll call it, for Tristan Peters. The previous Friday, he hit for the cycle against the Athletics. About 12 hours later, he learned that he would be representing the White Sox at the All-Star Game along with his teammates Miguel Vargas and Munetaka Murakami. And then, of course, he got to participate in the All-Star Game with a brief hiccup in there as well because he had a family emergency that he had to tend to. So it's been a wild, wild week for Tristan Peters, who joins me right now here on White Sox Weekly as we get set for the White Sox and Blue Jays game number 2 after they won last night, and they go for the series today. First pitch coming your way around 2:07. But Tristan, let's go back. I want to hit on all of the All-Star festivities and what the experience was like for you, but let's go back even before that, because before you actually got the nod and learned that you were an All-Star, you had an amazing night on that Friday night against the Athletics when you went for the cycle. And let's go back to it, that seventh inning when you hit the home run, and then all of a sudden you're thinking, hey, I just need a triple. At what point were you thinking, okay, this is coming around, I got a chance to do this? Had you ever done it before?
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. I've come close a couple times in my minor league career, but to actually do it is just a whole nother thing. It was pretty incredible and surreal. It was a blast.
So real quick, going back to that. So you homer, obviously, in the seventh inning, and then you're a triple shy. And at one point, I don't know, does it go through your mind at that point after you homer in the seventh that you're a triple shy? Or do you get back to the dugout? Who makes you aware that, hey, you're a triple shy of a cycle?
I think I was aware, but Tanner Murray, he had said, hey, you just need a triple. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess I do, huh? Uh-huh. And going into my last at-bat, I was definitely trying to hit a triple.
Of course, you should. And it's especially because of the score and the context, it was fantastic. And then it was wild that you go back up in the same inning. I mean, right. Did that just sneak up on you as well? Like, how does that play out?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of snuck up, obviously. Like, we put up a bunch of runs that inning. We hit around. So, credit to everybody else, too, for swinging it. Go ahead.
And then I know that Justin Jersley noted that, hey, he wasn't even quite aware because, obviously, again, the score kind of put it in a spot where maybe everybody wasn't thinking it through. But he was like, he recognized as you were apparently rounding the bag at second base that you were a triple shy.
Yeah, no, I mean, I hit that ball out of the box. I was thinking 3 automatically. And then I got to second, and I saw the stop sign. And I was like, oh, no, I'm running through this. but he didn't realize at first he was just trying to do his job. Because normally I probably wouldn't try to leg out a triple when we're up that much.
Of course. No, it makes all the sense in the world. I love it. So Tristan Peters joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Then take me through, I mean, crazy because, of course, look, you've had a phenomenal year. I'm sure that you always knew, you know, you have to have some confidence in yourself to get to where you're at in this point. But statistically, what you've done, what you've brought to the White Sox team as a whole has been instrumental. However, I'm not going to lie, Tristan, like the stats, like it's one of those things where I wasn't thinking, because I'm aware of, you know, how good a defensive center field you play. But honestly, that doesn't frequently get recognized for All-Star selection. So Saturday morning, when you find out there's a team meeting going on, what was going through your head at that point, especially when all of a sudden Mike Vassell, you've seen what's happened the first couple times, you know that he's probably noting that somebody on your team is being named as an All-Star. But at what point were you thinking, wait a minute, this is really me?
Yeah, I mean, it was basically one Vassell that let me know it was me. I think everybody in that room, it could have been anybody, honestly, because I think we had a bunch of All-Star worthy players that didn't go to the All-Star game too. It was an incredible moment, and it's Vassell does a good job with those. I don't know what you want to call it, but it was incredible. Yeah, he did a great job.
The all-star presentation, let's go with. But, he's made it his little niche here, and certainly it suits his role on the team. Tristan Peters joining me here on White Sox Weekly as the Sox get set for Game 2 against the Blue Jays later today. All right, Tristan. So, first, I guess I want to also follow up and make sure, how is your wife doing? Is she feeling better? Because I know that obviously interrupted the all-star festivities for a bit.
Yeah, no, she's doing better. We got an MRI here in Toronto, and she just has a herniated disc. So it's a common thing, but it obviously is quite painful. Just going to have to wait for it to heal and do some stretches and stuff. And the staff here has helped a lot. And then she's got some pain management, so she's been doing a lot better.
Okay, well, glad to hear that. And for those Sox fans who may have missed it, you got to Philadelphia late Sunday night, right? They met up with you. And then all of a sudden you're at the Home Run Derby. You get the call from her. You had to go check on the back. And how was that? It interrupted, obviously, the thing. And, of course, family first, the most important thing. I'm glad everything's doing well. But how did that go, too, just completely kind of putting everything to the side?
Yeah, I mean, she was at the Home Run Derby, too. But we watched it together from the stands because she needed some help with the baby. And I think part of that was due to the back. Mm-hmm. She'd been carrying her around all day. But then we watched Mooney, finished watching him, headed back to the hotel, tried to go to bed, but then she tried to get out of bed, and it was really painful for her. So she was like, man, this is a lot of pain. And she has a high pain tolerance. So she was concerned. I was concerned. We were like, we should probably just go to the hospital, get this checked out. So that's what we did around 1 a.m.
Yeah. And then obviously I saw that you noted, you know, you helped her at the hospital. You guys were both taking care of obviously your daughter, your newborn daughter here. So wild night, certainly not how you expected or anticipated spending, you know, the night before the All-Star game. But the good news is that everything was good. You guys were able to get back. You were able to, you know, participate in the game. So this is where I want to ask you. You're going through this. You learn you're a member of the All-Star team. But then you're in Philadelphia, and what a unique experience of all the All-Star games to be at on the 250th anniversary of the birth of America, and you're there taking it all in. What were some of your favorite moments just being a part of that?
Oh, I mean, there were so many. The red carpet was super cool, obviously. And yeah, you're right. The theme, too, of the 250th birthday of the U.S., I mean, that was so cool. I liked how they did the the starters would sign their name on the Declaration of Independence or something like that.
I loved that, too. It was a great visual for television. Yeah. Were you a little jealous that you didn't get a chance to sign your name?
I'll admit, yeah, a little bit. I think that was so cool.
Yeah.
But just to be there with so many legendary players, and just it was so cool to meet them and just watch them play too. And then to get in too. And I think honestly the highlight was seeing Vargy hit a homer in the All-Star game. That was electric, and it was a bomb too.
No doubt. But listen, the only extra base hit in the game, and certainly I do think. Right. Do you think he got robbed a little bit when it comes to the MVP? But hey, Cody Bellinger, kudos to him. He's had a long, successful career, so good for him. But yeah, yeah. I was a little perturbed that Miggy didn't get it, but that's okay. Yeah. We'll let that lie. So, how about the Savannah Banana Bat? At what point did you know you were going to go ahead and use that?
That was kind of an idea. As soon as I found out, I was like, you know what? Everybody's kind of been talking about the bananas about me. And I'm just like, I'm going to embrace it. I think I love bananas. I think they're a good time. So I just wanted to embrace it.
No, well, listen, well done. I definitely think that's the way to go with that. So we'll set that aside, though. You guys, you know, you guys bounced back in tremendous fashion after the Red Sox series. They threw a lot of tough lefties at you guys. You guys were struggling offensively, but you guys came out of it to end the half in style against the Athletics. And then you guys picked up right where you left off yesterday. You know, what's been the difference for you guys this season? Or I guess just in terms of how have you guys been able to set aside the occasional tough loss, because you still remain the only team in all of baseball yet to lose more than three games so far this year in a row?
Wow, that's pretty cool. You know, I think too, like when it comes to the Red Sox, we kind of caught them on a really hot streak. I mean, they won their 11th game in a row, yesterday. So I think just realizing that too, like teams are going to be hot, teams are going to be cold, but the best thing we can do is be consistent and just take it day by day and not worry about whether we lost yesterday or whether we won yesterday, and just kind of just stay even keel. And take it day by day.
Tristan Peters joining me for another moment here on White Sox Weekly. Okay, so of all you, like I was running through it, Tristan, of all the great moments that you've had so far this year, and if you want to add any to this, let me know, but just quickly, you had the walk-off hit in the home opener this year for the White Sox. You had your first home run. You had your first grand slam in a rout of the Royals on a Friday night. You also had the three-run home run against the Cubs, where it looked like that was going to be the difference in the ballgame until Michael Busch came up in the ninth and set the table for Edgar Caro's walk-off later that day. And then, of course, you had the cycle that we talked about. I mean, unbelievable the moments that you've had, and we haven't even gotten through the season yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm incredibly grateful. I mean, just the opportunity that they've given me to, I'm thankful that I could be in these situations to do those things. I mean, I also remember my first hit, a major league hit too in Milwaukee. It's just been an incredible season so far of milestones. And, you know, it's just such a fun team to do it with too. And I think they make that possible. It's an environment where we can all thrive.
Well, Tristan, yes, you had too many. First career hit. I even omitted that one, so shame on me. But listen, it's been a wild ride, and it has been so much fun watching you do what you've done. There's been a lot of key players on this team, but, you know, listen, I was going to say you're in some ways the unsung hero, but you're getting a little bit more notoriety these days, so keep on doing what you're doing because it's obviously working.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate that.
No problem at all. All right, Tristan, go get him today, and we'll talk soon.
Will do. Thanks for having me.
Just love that guy. Fun guy to root for, obviously. He was deserving, well-earned, has worked incredibly hard to get to the point he's been, and he seems to just be surpassing every litmus test that you give him, and he seems to go above and beyond, and in a lot of ways, just an unbelievable crowning achievement for his season so far to be named to the American League All-Star team, Tristan Peters. He's in the lineup today as well as the White Sox will get Shane Bieber on the mound, the righty. He squares off against Davis Martin. Hey, grab your friends and head to the park for Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. Get a ticket and two beers starting at $24. You must be 21 and over with a valid ID. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. I mentioned Jesse Rogers had an excellent piece on ESPN.com. On Tuesday morning of this week, he was in the room when the White Sox were discussing between Rochkalowski and Grady Emerson. Unbelievable access. He will join me next and we'll talk about it. This is the, you know what? Forgive me. I forgot. I owe you an ID. Let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we return, Jesse Rogers joins us to talk about the White Sox selection of Rochkalowski. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Sox games on the go, the ESPN Chicago app.
Go back to last Saturday. We're almost spot on. About 12:37 is from last Saturday. It was when the White Sox made the announcement that Rochkalowski was their first overall pick. And before I bring in Jesse Rogers, who had a fantastic article, he had unbelievable access inside the room where it happened. They had the conversation about Rochkalowski versus Grady Emerson. He did a fantastic job on ESPN.com detailing what went down. But I also want to give the White Sox media team, the social media team, a bravo, well done, because they salvaged a huge moment for the White Sox organization and Rock Chalowski, because the commissioner, boy, he just can't get out of his own way. I mean, it was not that hard to learn Rock Chalowski's name, the presumptive number one overall pick for at least the last 6 months. You would have thought that that one was an easy one to get right, but I digress. Kudos to the White Sox social media team for doing a great job creating that video where they drowned out the actual pronunciation, the mispronunciation of Chalowski by the commissioner, and create a great moment so that going forward we can watch the day that the White Sox selected Chalowski and not have to worry so much about Rob Manfred's foible. I digress. I bring in Jesse Rogers now of ESPN, the intrepid baseball insider. Jesse, you gave me a heads up a couple weeks prior that you were going to be doing this, and then you joined Len Casper and us in the booth on Saturday after the White Sox made the selection. You called it a career highlight, and I will tell you, great job. It was a fantastic piece.
Well, Jeff Mueller, good to be with you. That's how Rob would pronounce it if he was on with you.
Chef's kiss. That. Nice job. Nicely done.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Thanks for the kind words. It was a lot of work to put together in a short period of time, because I was in that draft room on Friday. They made the pick Saturday. And of course, when that happens, you want to run the story as quickly as you possibly can. So I had to turn around 4,000 words by Wednesday, because you know, once the second half starts, it starts to get old. So we wanted to run it during the All-Star break, and it turned out even better than I thought. Not because of anything I did, but because of the debate in the room. It was a true baseball debate, and, you know, different perspectives from each and every department within the White Sox organization, baseball operations organization, really being sort of unfettered with their comments, speaking from their heart, speaking from their mind, and they let me write it all. So I gotta say thank you to them for allowing me to do it, because I think it turned out really well.
Yeah, I know. It is a fantastic piece, and I will encourage anybody. You said it might be getting a little bit dated here, but for White Sox fans, if you have not read it, I would highly encourage you to go check it out, because you're going to want to read the conversation that happened, as Jesse noted, between all of the, you know, everybody basically important in the White Sox organization and helping come to this collaboration. You know, sometimes it's funny because people will, you know, snare at the word collaboration, and they feel like, hey, that's a way for somebody, a decision maker, to skirt any responsibility. But I, going through this, reading what you put out there, Jess, is I'm encouraged again. It just goes to show that the White Sox organization, first and foremost, setting aside the selection of Rock Chalowski, but the fact that Chris Getz is, and I know you noted it, so I'll let you say it, but the way he goes about doing his job and then embracing the conversation and the debate is truly helping them, I think, arrive at a spot where they definitely were not at with under the previous administration.
Yeah, and I don't know how else to say it, but as simply as this, he was there and saw the wrong ways to do it in his mind. In his mind, these were the wrong ways to go about things. The process didn't result in acquiring and signing up good players, championship caliber players. So let's change the process up a little bit and be a little bit more collaborative. And it feels like that's been the case, kind of more modern, you know, day, basically, because this is what the great organizations do. They bring in their sports performance people, and they bring in their analytics, and they bring in their scouts, and they bring in a guy like Phil Nevin, and everybody has a voice. And boy, just think about that. 10 voices going in one direction probably leads you to a better result than 2 voices going in one direction, right?
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, you have to make the decision. It seemed like a close call to me, at least. I felt when I left the room, it'd probably be Chalowski, but during the debate, there was enough sort of like positives about Emerson and, you know, if you want to call it negatives about Chalowski, that if they had taken Emerson, I would not have been shocked.
I think that's a great point, and both would have been defensible. And maybe another big takeaway for me was, you know, Chris Getz basically setting the tone early in the meeting that, hey, it's on us as an organization to make sure that we get the best out of these players. And I think that's something that was missing previously. We've seen it now, I think, time and time again, something that you've talked about, something that I know everybody inside the organization has talked about. When the young players arrive these days, they seem ready for the moment and not overwhelmed in any way. And I think you have to give a lot of credit to Chris Getz and everybody underneath him, whether it be Josh Barfield or on the hitting side, you know, Ryan Fuller on the pitching side, Brian Bannister. And from the top down, they do a great job now finally of preparing their young players to play in the big leagues.
Which is why I don't think Rock Chulowski is going to be rushed in any manner. Now, he's already played 3 years of big time college baseball, so he's already a little bit more advanced, certainly, than Grady Emerson and maybe some other kids that played JUCO baseball or Division II baseball, whatever the case may be. So he's already a little bit more battle-tested than most. That doesn't mean he's going to be up here opening day on 27 or June 1st on 27. It's just when he's ready. They will determine that. There won't be a date put on it. Even Getz in the meeting mentioned how set they are in the infield. No reason to rush anybody when we have four starting infielders, at least signed through next year with Murakami. So he will arrive when he's ready and not a day sooner.
Jesse Rogers joining me here on White Sox Weekly as we break down his piece on ESPN.com. He was inside the draft room or inside the war room as the White Sox discussed who they were going to select the day before the MLB draft last Saturday. One thing I liked too, I saw your quote from Ryan Fuller about Rock Chulowski and the arm bar that he swung with two strikes. And, you know, Rock admitting, I believe later in the Zoom, or I know he admitted to Ryan Fuller that understood that his two strike approach was not the best. And there's some maybe untapped upside that a lot of people didn't necessarily, you know, like with Chulowski, the easy sell was, hey, he's more of a known product, but it sounds like, based on what you wrote, that they truly believe there's a lot of untapped potential as well with Rock Chulowski.
Yeah, I mean, there certainly is with Emerson at 18 years old, but even with Chulowski, for sure, they want to get inside the hitting lab, so to speak. I mean, one thing, you know, I'm not a beat reporter for the White Sox, so maybe the beat guys realize this, but Ryan Fuller is a very important person within that organization. All hitting people go through Ryan Fuller, meaning the hitting coaches, the players, obviously. So, you know, I think Phil Nevin at some point, Ryan Fuller was sitting behind Nevin, and Nevin referenced Fuller as the master. He's like, I don't know if he was talking about Emerson or Chulowski, once we get him, meaning the player, to the master behind me here, we'll find out. I think he was actually referencing Emerson. Once we get Emerson to the master here, if they took Emerson. So Ryan Fuller is going to have a big say in what happens to this guy as he enters the organization, the plan for hitting, the plan to fix some things like that arm bar and his two-strike approach. And it's up to the hitting coaches at every level to enact that plan that Fuller comes up with. So, you know, it's funny, I mentioned the other day on the radio, Brian Bannister was like way in the back of this meeting. He had no say in all this. Ryan Fuller was absolutely front and center. Everybody, you know, kind of went back to Fuller after giving their say. I mean, they went back to Getz, and Getz would go back to Fuller. But Fuller had a very big say. And Phil Nevin did as well when it came to character. And can we believe in this guy? Picking a guy 1-1 has a lot of meaning behind it and pressure on him. And Nevin could not have spoken higher than he did of both Chulowski and Emerson and their character and what they bring to the table. So he checked them both off in that box, at least, if the Sox were going to go in either direction. He was like, yeah, I like both these guys.
Jesse Rogers joining me here on White Sox Weekly. He had the inside access to the White Sox conversation, their debate between Rock Chulowski and Grady Emerson, as he joins me here on White Sox Weekly. Jess, I also enjoyed, this is perfect too, because I think it just goes to show, I trust somebody more when they're willing to acknowledge, hey, I don't know everything, and I may not know everything that I don't know, but what I want to do is surround myself with as many smart people as possible to help me make the most informed decisions as possible. And I think that's something, again, that comes across in your piece in regards to Chris Getz. In particular, I'll note how I love how on Saturday morning there he makes the call to Rock's agent, Joel Wolf, right? And He's trying to note, hey, we're going to go with our guy here. And he slips, and it's human. We're not like, you know, who knows how much sleep Chris Getz is operating on right. by Saturday, by the time the day finally rolls around. But he slips up and says Grady, right? And this is particularly interesting because for Grady Emerson and Rokchalowski, they're both represented by the same agency. So for, you know, him to say, hey, we're going to take Grady, it's just a slip up. But I love the fact that, hey, we're okay. You put that in there. It's all good. It just goes to show. And then Chris quickly admits, no. I just slipped up there.
Right. I meant Rock. Yeah, it was kind of funny. And actually, Joel Wolf, the agent, told me that part of it. Mm-hmm. Chris kept that part out. I don't know, on purpose. It seemed like a very quick, innocuous thing. But, you know, understandable because they are represented by the same agency. And they were debating both players just the day before. So he calls up Joel and says, I'm ready to do a deal with Grady. But the night before, they had already been talking about Rock. So it threw Joel for a loop. And Joel isn't the main agent for Grady anyway. It's Sam Samardzija. So it's all this stuff. They got worked out quickly. And then, so they work out the deal for Rock. And it's $10.35 million. They send Sox TV out there. And they have to lie to get into the house because the family doesn't want to know who's drafting until they say it on TV. So Sox TV says we're with MLB, and then they get in there, they get drafted, and they say, no, it's actually the Sox who are in your living room with you right now. So the whole thing from start to finish was pretty amazing. And the fact that it really came down to the last 24 hours is pretty amazing. I think Chalowski was the leader in the clubhouse the whole way, but Emerson absolutely closed the gap to the point where when I was in there, it was a true debate, and I did not enter the room knowing which way they were going to go. I exited feeling like it would be Chalowski, but wasn't 100% sure, especially if the contract fell through. They felt good enough about Emerson that if Chalowski made some incredible demands, they would have pivoted and taken Grady Emerson.
Yeah, because, you know, to Jesse's point right there, the bonus pool money, which the White Sox went into with the highest ever after making that trade of Jacob Gonzalez, which allowed them the slot money for the 34th selection. Yes, Rokchalowski sets the record, but to Jesse's point at this, if Rock had said, I want a million over slot, then maybe there's a different conversation because, as Jesse just noted, you know, they felt good about Grady Emerson and what that money allows them to do later in the draft. You know, I think you could probably speak to it just as much as I can, but reading all the draft experts, the White Sox got routinely applauded for the job they have done. And certainly you've got the advantage of having the first overall pick, but that doesn't always mean that teams use it well. It sounds like what they were able to do with their draft pool money, they put it to work, and virtually everybody who does studies this closely has given the White Sox an A for the work that they did.
Yeah, I think the third round pick, Prosek at 41, is the key there. From what I understand, he was dropping because of his salary demands. But the White Sox had saved enough on Landon Tomei and Chalowski that they were able to afford Prosek's asking price. So that was a guy that was probably a better talent than 41, but because he was asking for money, he started to drop, but the Sox were able to meet that. So I think what you read is correct about the entirety of the draft. They did really well. They heard that Landon Tomei was going to be taken before 41, which I don't know if they heard that before or after they got the 34th pick, but they knew they needed to use the 34th pick if they were going to get Landon Tomei. So he was going to be gone between 34 and 41. So it kind of all worked out for them. Underslot for Tomei, a little bit of underslot for Chalowski, overslot for Prosek, and then you go on from there.
Jesse Rogers, and I encourage anybody, if you haven't checked it out, if you're a Sox fan, you definitely want to read this because it is fantastic. So go check it out. We covered a lot of it, but there's still plenty in there that is you're going to want to see. So go check that out if you haven't already. Jesse, a couple more minutes with you. I want to ask you more, too, about what's going on the field now at the professional level because the White Sox certainly have had a fantastic season to date, and they come out of the All-Star break yesterday with a big win over the Blue Jays. They basically pick up right where they left off against the Athletics to end the first half. And now I think the real questions turn to what are the White Sox going to be willing to do as the trade deadline approaches? The lineup looks really good when everybody's healthy, but it certainly seems like probably like everybody in baseball, the White Sox can certainly use a couple extra arms, specifically maybe a starter.
Yeah, definitely a starter to fit in after Burke and Davis Martin. I think everybody kind of agrees with that. Maybe push Fetty down, push Schultz down, or even out of the rotation, move K down a notch, whatever it is. If they could trade for a playoff caliber starter, doesn't have to be game one, mm-hmm. but someone you're confident in starting in a playoff game, I think they'd absolutely like to do that. And there are guys going to be available. Now, along those lines, you always want a little quantity in the bullpen as well. I like their bullpen. I know Sir Anthony Dominguez hasn't been lights out, and Grant Teller's had a bump or two. But overall, it has been a good bullpen when you add Newcomb and you add Hudson. That doesn't mean you don't look for an arm. But I don't think they have to get the best arm on the market. If they can, great. Meaning an eighth or ninth inning arm, great. But if they're going to spend an asset, I would try to spend it on that third kind of playoff starter that they don't have currently. Easier said than done. It can get costly. It's why you weigh rental versus cost control, you know, Robbie Ray versus Joe Ryan. I mean, those are the things you weigh. Certainly the Sox have some ammunition to use. They used a little bit with Jacob Gonzalez, but that replenished their farm system even more. So that means maybe somebody else is expendable, right? So I think these are the question marks. Is it Bonomer? Is it Tanner McDougal? How aggressive will he get? I think he'll be aggressive. I just don't know how aggressive. If they could get a right-handed bat just to help out a little bit, because they're a little susceptible against left-handed pitching. But you know what? No team is perfect. No team is perfect. And I'd rather have the left-handed slug that they have. You saw it show up last night than anything else. So if they did nothing to their position player group, I'd be okay with it. They added a right-handed bat. Even as a backup, I'd be okay with it. That third playoff caliber starter, maybe one bullpen arm, see what happens. That's what I would do.
Our last thing here, Justin, and I'll let you go. I know you're busy. So and I'll add, too, with the bullpen, keep an eye out. Don't dismiss Jordan Hicks. Since he returned from the injured list, he's gone 8 scoreless innings, and he's struck out 15 hitters over those 8 innings. Has not allowed a run, and I think his whip is like 0.5 or something over those 8 innings. So they've certainly figured some stuff out since he's returned. So he could be a key piece at the back end of the bullpen that they may not need to trade for. But what about somebody like Reed Detmers, or I'll throw out Jose Soriano. I'm more intrigued by Detmers. The Angels are one of the few teams, along with maybe the Mets and Rockies and Giants, who look like they're pretty obviously out of it. Is Artie Moreno actually going to let John Mozeliak go ahead and make some trades from the Angels, or are they just going to be the same old LA Angels of Anaheim?
I think he's going to let him make some trades, because why hire a guy like Mozeliak if you're not going to let him tinker at least a little bit? Mozeliak's been around the block a lot, so I do think he'll let him do what he thinks is best for the organization, but that might be holding on to those pitchers. It's not easy to get good pitchers, especially in Anaheim. You're right. I mean, Detmers or Soriano with team control, Robbie Ray, I mentioned, a rental, more of a rental type, Freddie Peralta, more of a rental type. There's options out there, and I don't know which one they're going to get, but I do think they'll get one, Jeff. I will go on record and say, I do think they'll get one of those available starters that you wouldn't be upset if he started a playoff game. You may not think he's a number one, but maybe he's a number three. And that's okay, because they need a third no matter where it is. I think they'll get one. I do think they'll get one. It's going to be a very interesting trade season for two reasons. So many AL teams in the race, okay? So how many players are actually going to get moved? And I do think the impending labor issue is going to pop up here and there. Do you want to trade for someone with a year and 2 months left on his deal if half of next season's wiped out? Well, half of his last year on his contract will be wiped out. So I think the rentals will be the easier deals to make. But, of course, teams ask a lot even for just 2 months. So this is where, you know, Getz is going to have to just kind of roll the dice and cross his fingers he makes the right call. And two things happen. The Sox contend this year and still have their core for the future. And I think he can do it.
And last thing, because you didn't really say it, but you've told me numerous times, Chris Getz, as you noted, is unafraid, right?
I think he will be aggressive. I think he's unafraid. I think he's unafraid to lose a trade. And I said that to you and Len on the air. Like, that's important. He's going to lose a deal. Like, he's probably got executive of the year locked up right now. But he might lose a deal in the next 2 weeks. We don't know. Or lose a deal that in the next 2 weeks, but doesn't show up for 2 years,
yeah.
right? Because he trades a young player. You can't be afraid to make a deal and lose a deal. And I think he's got that quality. And trust me, not every executive does. They like to play it safe. I think Chris understands the moment the American League is in, the moment this division's in. The future's never promised. Look at the Royals. Look at the Tigers. You're talking about, I've said this before, and I'll say it again to you, young players about to hit a lockout. The Sox will have no communication with those young players. Who knows what next year or the year after is going to bring? You do not know they're all going to take steps forward the way we think they are.
Mm-hmm.
You have a first-place team now in a weak and down league. Go for it.
Great stuff, Jess. The article was fantastic, and of course, your insight great as well. Thanks for hopping on, man.
You got it, Jeff. Be well, buddy. See ya.
Jesse Rogers, of course, ESPN insider, had that fantastic inside look at the White Sox debate, Rock Chulowski versus Grady Emerson. Hey, Sox fans, join us at the ballpark Monday, July 27th at 6:40 for Christmas in July, presented by Kordak. Receive a Christmas-themed White Sox t-shirt when you purchase a specially priced ticket. Limited availability to purchase tickets and prepaid pit parking. Visit whitesox.com/promos. Good news, White Sox fans. Miguel Vargas left last night's game after being hit by a pitch on the hand. He is back in the White Sox starting lineup. I'll give that to you when we return right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The Rich Eisen Show, weekdays, noon to 2, ESPN Chicago.
Sox fans, take advantage of savings all summer long with our summer savings section. Score select lower level tickets starting at $20 on weekdays and $25 on weekends. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly as we get set for the second of three games between the White Sox and Blue Jays in Toronto. Davis Martin on the bump for the Sox. Shane Bieber grabs the pill for the Blue Jays. White Sox lineup looks like this. Good news, Miguel Vargas back in the starting lineup after leaving last night's game after being hit by a pitch on the hand. But Miggy back in the lineup. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that the game was fairly out of reach. The White Sox had an 8-run lead in the eighth inning when Vargas was hit by a pitch. So I think the White Sox were just being a little bit cautious there. So back in the lineup today, Sam Antonacci in left leading off, Munetaka Murakami at first base, bats second. Miggy mans the hot corner and also bats third. Colson Montgomery cleans up at shortstop today. Andrew Benintendi, the lefty DH, hitting fifth. Kyle Teal behind the plate hits sixth. Brayden Montgomery, your switch hitting right fielder, bats seventh. Tristan Peters, the all-star who joined us earlier today, back home in Canada, although not quite home. He's from Manitoba, but back across the border where he comes from. And then Chase Mydroth will round out the lineup and play second base today. So that is your White Sox lineup, which does not include Rock Chulowski just yet. However, Rock did meet with the media last Saturday after he was selected. If you missed it, we're going to bring it to you. Lots of interesting things from the first overall pick in the 2026 draft. When we come back, this is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Chulowski.
You can make an argument for any of them, but when we got to know Rock, this felt like it was the best fit.
Rock Chulowski is off the board, the number one overall pick.
I walked around Chicago till 2 a.m. I left, you know, the next morning and called my agent and told him that, you know, that's where I want to be.
As Chulowski gets out in front of this one, way back there to left field and gone.
The one hopper Chulowski.
Oh, my.
Very pretty.
Oh, my.
Very pretty. Chulowski, woo, showing off.
In the air to left center field. Rock Chulowski does it again.
Now this one's blasted. Left field deep. You can forget it. Off the scoreboard in left field.
Rock Chulowski making it look easy.
Somebody every day.
High in the air by Chulowski. Deep left field. And the Bruins have the lead. Rock Chulowski rocks that one. Down to their last out.
No, I'm not saying bunny.
Well, maybe he will. Right through the side where there's nobody. And into right field. Dean West goes to third. Chalowski to second. It's a bunt double for Rock Chalowski. And he drives this one. More of a traditional swing this time after his bunt. And Chalowski is homered again.
Out into left center field. How about the grab made by Chalowski?
And Chalowski hits it high in the air to left field. Compton ranging back at the wall. It's gone.
3-1 offer. That ball hit high and deep to left. It's gone. They kept the baseball away from him, and for good reason.
Sneak a little Connor McKnight in there for your Rock Chalowski highlights on the Big Ten Network. Of course, get to know that name, Sox fans, and probably already very familiar with it. You know the Rock part, but do you know the Chalowski part, unlike Rob Manfred? Well, get to know Rock a little bit better here as he met the media after being selected first overall last Saturday. Lots of interesting things from the White Sox top overall pick. We're going to bring that to you here in just a moment after I remind you, Sox fans, join us at the ballpark Sunday, July 26th, as the Sox take on the Houston Astros at 110. 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a Munetaka Murakami first MLB home run bobblehead presented by Toto Washlet. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promo. So this was Rock Chalowski meeting the media last week after being selected first overall by the White Sox.
You know, I didn't really pay much mind to it until, you know, after the season was over. You know, how mock drafts are and how everyone talks about, you know, selections and where guys are going pretty early, you know, before everything plays out. But, you know, after the season was over, I got to go out to Chicago and got dinner with Getz and Barfield, which was pretty cool, and got to talk with them and pick their brain. And then the next day got to have lunch with Ryan Fuller. And I had never been out to Chicago prior. So, you know, I was a little hesitant to go out there before that. But then going out there, spending 2 days with them, the office, the players, being able to go for a game, being there for Braden Montgomery's debut and walk-off home run. You know, just seeing how much goes into it and seeing how bought in everybody in the office and in the clubhouse was, you know, it was just something that I wanted to be a part of. So, you know, I was pretty happy with the selection today.
Most number one draft picks go to teams at the very bottom of a rebuild, but you're joining a White Sox team that is currently leading the AL Central or up there. What is it like to be drafted by a surprise contender?
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. You know, I know that, you know, I'm not going straight to the big leagues. I know that there's a lot of work that, you know, needs to be put in, but, you know, seeing, you know, how well the team at the top's doing and, you know, the moves that they're making, the way that those guys are playing, it's definitely a lot more motivation to, you know, get up there and, you know, join those guys at some point. But, you know, being able to be a part of a contender team, it's pretty cool just because, you know, I value winning a lot. And, you know, seeing what they're doing up there for the first half of the season is pretty special.
Hey, Rock, congratulations. I know you play shortstop, you've been a shortstop. How do you feel about, you know, holding on to that position, and what do you see yourself in terms of position versatility, which has become so important in the major league level?
Yeah, you know, I just want to develop as a shortstop and, you know, see how long I can play that. I mean, it's a tough position to play at the big league level. You know, I feel like I'm very capable of doing that. I know that, you know, the White Sox love drafting shortstops, and, you know, they got a lot of guys up there playing right now at different positions. But, you know, my main goal is to get up to the big leagues and, you know, play wherever the team sees fit for me and where they need me to be at. So, you know, I'm excited, whatever it is. But, you know, I'd love to play shortstop. I know I'm capable of playing shortstop. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just trying to get to the big leagues and help someone win.
What's the feel of being 1-1 overall? I mean, it's great to be a first-round pick, but you're in a very select group being the first overall pick.
I mean, it's pretty surreal. You know, it's something that everyone dreams of, you know, that's going through the process. And, you know, finally getting to hear my name called today was, you know, something that I'll always have with me and, you know, be able to look back on and, you know, something to be a part of. You know, I got to connect a lot with Phil Nevin in the offseason. You know, I met him before the season started and got to sit down and have lunch with him. And, you know, he was just telling me about, you know, how special it is to be the first overall pick. You know, there's only one every year. There's been 61, you know, in the history of baseball. So, you know, being able to be a part of that brotherhood and, you know, being able to call myself the first overall pick is something that I always hold tight to me.
So it sounds like you got to meet quite a few White Sox people. Did you talk to Jerry Reinsdorf too, by any chance?
I did. When I came out to Chicago, I got to sit down with him, and that was another surreal experience. You know, his office was one of the coolest things that I've ever seen. And just being able to talk to a guy like that who's, you know, really seen everything, I didn't do much talking. I just, you know, he told me a bunch of stories, and you know, I just sat back and listened, and it was, you know, it was probably the highlight of the trip.
Rock, nice to meet you, and congratulations. You mentioned, you know, having lunch with Ryan Fuller, and also just like a bunch of people in the organization. Just what have you learned in that process that maybe, you know, made you feel like this was a good fit for you, or, you know, kind of made you understand like how this organization works, and, you know, how they, you know, develop hitters in a way that, you know, seems like it can, you know, work well with you?
Yeah, I mean, both things. I mean, the whole office, you know, just seeing how invested they were into the players. You know, it really felt like to me like a college clubhouse. You know, it didn't feel like what I imagined pro ball being, you know, especially after meeting with a lot of other teams and being in different clubhouses in the past couple weeks. You know, it was just a different feel in there. It was something that I felt like I could go in there and, you know, be a part of. You know, that's the kind of environment that I strive in. But, you know, meeting with Ryan Fuller for lunch, I mean, it was supposed to be a quick 30, 45 minute lunch and then get out of there and see him at the game. But I mean, we sat and talked for an hour and a half, 2 hours, just about hitting and everything. And, you know, just running me through their scouting reports, what they do for players. He ran me through the Colson Montgomery story about how he struggled a little bit and they took him back and, you know, did some things to help him. And now seeing him do big things at the big league level is pretty cool. But I mean, just being able to understand, you know, how much goes into it and how invested those guys are into the players, you know, something that I'm really excited about. I mean, talking to, you know, gets on the phone after the pick and, you know, getting a text from Fuller and Barfield and Nevin, you know, they're super invested in the players and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Bit about the it feeling like a college team. That's something like players here say a lot. And obviously you just are coming off of being a leader of a college team. How similar do you feel like the vibe or like kind of the atmosphere they have is the one you tried to cultivate with UCLA?
Yeah. I mean, it was very, very similar. I mean, that was the main thing, you know, when I came back to, you know, my house in Westwood, and one of my roommates asked, how was it? You know, that was the biggest part for me was, you know, the clubhouse dynamic, seeing how much fun those guys have, how much they enjoy seeing other guys succeed. You know, they were all great to me. You know, I got to watch a couple of, I got to see Antonacci, Vargas, Mike Droff, all those guys hit before the game in the tunnel. And, you know, just the fun banter, coming up to me, treating me like I was, you know, one of them. I got to sit down with, you know, Noah Schultz and have lunch before the game. You know, it just seemed like everybody liked everybody. You know, it wasn't a selfish group. Everybody was pulling for each other. And, you know, that's kind of the thing that felt most like college.
Hey, Rock, I want to follow up on that lunch with Fuller. And I'm sure he didn't tell you things you need to work on before they draft you. But I'm wondering if you've told him some things you need to work on offensively to take it to another level.
Yeah, there was a lot. I mean, he kind of asked me what I want to get better at the next level. And I had told him exactly what, you know, I thought that I needed to do and what, you know, I thought that I could get better at. And, you know, we had, you know, all the same opinions about, you know, my play and my swing and my offensive side of the game. And he kind of just told me, you know, all the things that they did for guys that were in the similar shoes that I have. And you know, what he did to develop them and what the organization did. And, you know, it was, I learned a lot about hitting that day. You know, I dive a lot into hitting and, you know, I talk to a lot of people about it, you know, try and learn as much as I can. But, I mean, that lunch with them felt like I discovered a lot of new things and I'm excited to get to work with them.
Anything stand out, like in particular that you guys discussed that jumped out at you?
No, I mean, there was a lot. I mean, every hitter's different. I mean, that's the thing that we really connected on was, I mean, we both know that, you know, not everyone's going to swing the same way. Not everyone's going to move the same way. It's what's finding what works best for you. And, you know, he had told me that, you know, other people questioned some of the ways that I swing the bat or how I set up. And, you know, he said, you know, it's how you hit. It's how you hit forever. And, you know, we're going to do our best to, you know, try and elevate that, which, you know, I really appreciate because there's a lot of people that critique my swing and how I hit. You know, it's gotten to me where I'm at today. And, you know, the questions are obviously questions that people are going to have. But, you know, he was just very adamant about getting me better at what I'm good at.
I was watching the broadcast and I noticed that the commissioner kind of butchered your last name on stage. Can you give White Sox fans a guide on how to say it? And also, yeah and also we also noticed there was a lot of emotion when your name was called after like betting on yourself in college instead of turning pro out of high school. What exactly was like running through your mind?
Yeah. I mean, so the pronunciation, it's Rock Chalowski. I don't think it's too hard. I sent in a video the other day of the correct pronunciation. I didn't hear it get butchered. I was just kind of, I heard Rock and kind of lost it. But yeah, it's Rock Chalowski. But you know, the emotions, it was a very emotional last few days. You know, finding out a couple of days ago that, you know, I was the guy that they wanted. And then it ended up, you know, whether or not it was going to work out. So having the conversations the last couple of days, you know, with Shirley and Getz and my agent was very stressful. And then this morning, waking up to a call at around like 8:45, 9, you know, I went and got myself a hotel room around the corner from my house just because I was a little stressed out and, you know, worried about what was going to happen. You know, I felt very tied to Chicago ever since I went out there, and, you know, it was just where I wanted to be. And, you know, I was worried about that not working out on their end, and, you know, getting a call from, you know, my agent that him and Getz were able to work something out today. It was just, I mean, I was jumping around my hotel room. There were, you know, a lot of tears, and I was just excited to get here and, you know, share the moment with everybody. So, you know, I didn't share it with anybody, you know, while I was here. I wanted everyone to find out on TV. So, you know, I kept it with me, and then, you know, just being able to hear my name called was, it was unbelievable. So
what was this year like for you going in, knowing, you know, everyone was talking about you being the number one pick, you were the kind of the chalk pick from the beginning. And then you kind of, you know, you were the Big Ten player of the year last year. When you get into conference, I assume teams are really 15. Planning how they pitch against you and, you know, trying to take away what you do well. So I'm just curious what this whole year was like.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big chess game. You know, trying to understand what teams are trying to do to me and trying to counteract with that was the big thing. You know, I had an unbelievable sophomore year and, you know, obviously, you know, want to repeat that and do more than you did the year before. But I know that, you know, you can't always do that. So the main focus was, you know, just trying to take stuff day by day and really, you know, just worry about the game or practice that I have that specific day. But I mean, just trying to stick with it and get through the season. I mean, you know, the goal is to go win a national championship, and that fell short, but I mean, just trying to eliminate everything, you know, the mock drafts, people talking about it. I really tried to, you know, get rid of all of that until after the season was done.
How successful was that? That's got to be tough to, like, you know, when everyone's talking about it and things like that, social media.
Yeah, I got a lot of great people around me. So, you know, it was a lot easier than I expected. They did a good job of, you know, tuning out everything and really just letting me do my thing. But, you know, then after the season was done and it started picking back up and, you know, starting to meet with teams, it was a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks, Rock. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Ryan McGuffey.
Hey, Rock, congratulations. I want to ask you about that time in Chicago, specifically about the clubhouse you talked about, it being like a college atmosphere. Knowing that the White Sox very rarely is the number one team, you know, in playoff contention while they're making a pick, and here you have a team full of a lot of young guys like yourself on the verge of doing something possibly special in 2026, and you're knocking on the door. So the White Sox put a phone call out with you and Chris earlier saying that you took years off of my life. So can you just kind of reiterate and talk about that nervous energy of wanting to be with the White Sox and fitting into that clubhouse that you talked about when you came to Chicago and knowing that you're so close?
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, there was originally, I didn't want to come out, you know, a couple weeks before they had asked me to go. I just, you know, I kind of wanted to let things play out. I didn't really, you know, I'd never been out to the Midwest for the most part. And I'd never been out to Chicago. I was very hesitant to go out there just because I didn't know what I was getting myself into. But, you know, the second that I got off the flight and, you know, Josh Barfield picked me up from the airport, like it was, I mean, I was wide-eyed the entire week. I mean, I was there for 3 days. And, you know, when I was leaving the field after Montgomery's walk-off, you know, I had told them I wish I could have stayed for another week. But, you know, the whole experience, you know, being able to go to dinner with Getz and Barfield, being able, you know, they dropped me off at the hotel right after dinner, and I'd sat and I walked around Chicago till 2 a.m., you know, just trying to understand, you know, what it's all about and see everything that has to come with it. And then, you know, the next day getting to sit down with Fuller and then, you know, walked again for 5 more hours before the game, and then being able to go to the game, meet everybody, see the stadium, meet the players, see the dynamic. You know, I left, you know, the next morning and called my agent and told him that, you know, that's where I want to be. And, you know, just he's got to do whatever he can to make it work, because I know that that's where I want to be. And I hope that they feel the same way about me. So, you know, being able to work it out in the long end, I mean, the tears were all happy tears. I'm very excited to be a part of it. You know, I fell in love with the city while I was out there, and I'm very excited to get back.
Had you been following the team after you left, or did you try to just – yeah, you have?
Yeah, big time. You know, I was telling, you know, my closest friends to me that, you know, with the last couple of days of the negotiations, you know, not finding a deal, that I was, you know, a little upset with how attached I got to Chicago, just in case it didn't work out. But, you know, I started playing with them on the show. You know, my home and away jerseys on my custom team are the City Connects and the Throwback Creams. You know, I've been watching the games. You know, I got really attached to it, and you know, I'm very excited to be a part of it. You know, I would have been a little upset if it didn't work out.
Hey, Rocca, how much did affect it? Did you know them from? I know they did a lot of work on you coming out of high school too. Did that help a little in this process? And that, or is it different people?
No, a lot of the same people. I mean, they had a lot of interest in me in high school, which, you know, definitely I think played a little into it now. But I mean, they were all great people back then. You know, they hadn't changed. They were very, you know, they were very happy with how I handled my college career, and they were very adamant about telling me about that. When I was at the combine before I even walked into the meeting with everybody, Shirley came out and we had a great conversation for 2 to 3 minutes, just telling me how proud he was of me and, you know, how impressive he thought it was to, you know, go to college and do what I did. And just told me, you know, whatever you say in this meeting isn't going to deter how we feel about you or what we're going to do within the next couple weeks. They just kind of wanted to sit down and retouch base. Just cause you know, I have known them forever and, you know, they've always been super great to me and super invested into what I'm doing.
Rocca, how important was it for you and your family and your agent to know that the White Sox wanted you and that you wanted to be there, and then knowing today that they were most likely going to take you? How much do you think that helped your part, and it helped their part, knowing how much, you know, to pursue you as opposed to other fine young talent there?
Yeah, I mean, it was relieving. You know, there was a mutual want between the two parties, which I think made everything a lot easier for everybody. You know, when they expressed Thursday night that, you know, they wanted me to be the guy and, you know, they knew that I wanted to be there, I feel like things, you know, definitely got a lot easier. You know, it came down to whatever it came down to in the last couple of days. But, I mean, just the mutual, you know, want to have each other was, I think, big in the end.
Has it soaked in that you are a multimillionaire today?
I mean, not really. You know, I don't really play with my money too much anyways. You know, I don't enjoy looking at my bank account or, you know, seeing what's in there. You know, I really just, you know, buy the necessities and kind of relax. So, I mean, the signing bonus isn't really going to change that. So, I mean, it's a cool thing to have, but I will definitely get a new car though. Yes, for sure. I'll sell my current truck and go buy a nicer one here soon.
Congrats, Rock. Just wanted to ask a little bit about kind of how, you know, you being pitched differently this year at UCLA. Obviously, you had a target on your back to say, right? How do you think that's made you a better hitter and may help you in pro ball, where people are going to be pitching to you at a higher level than what you were facing in college?
Yeah, I mean, I think it helps, you know, going into facing a game plan every day as opposed to just facing what the pitcher's good at. You know, not just me, but, you know, one or two other guys on our team were, you know, would be circled every weekend and, you know, we'd be the guys that they're trying to get out and, you know, just trying to, you know, solve that puzzle and figure out what I'm going to get or, you know, just have a close to an idea of what I'm going to get. I think it's going to help me a lot, especially on the West Coast. You know, a lot of the West Coast teams do a lot of game planning, pitch planning. So facing that for 3 years, I think it's going to help me a lot.
Yeah. On top of that, do you think that the College World Series experiences you've had in your college career has led to kind of that understanding of just how the moment rises in those times?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you put yourself in a lot of big situations as an athlete. You know, there's a lot that I went through the last couple of years and even prior to that, you know, everything builds. So, you know, having those past moments are only going to help me for my future.
Hey, Rocca, it seems like you're pretty eager to get going. So your last game was over a month ago. What have you been able to do, like, as far as, like, staying active or ramped up? And how much are you kind of at – do you have expectations about how soon or how much you want to play down the stretch in the minor leagues?
Yeah, I'd love to play as much as I can. You know, I've been working out, hitting, throwing, everything for the last couple of weeks. You know, I only took 1 week off after the season was done, and that was when I went out to Chicago. But, you know, since then I've been back to work and, you know, just trying to get ready for, you know, whenever they feel like I'm ready to go get sent out and start playing is, you know, I want to be ready for that day. So, you know, just I've been having the same routine that I've really had for the last 6 months.
Again, that was Rock Chalowski meeting the media shortly after being drafted last Saturday. If you missed it this week, Baseball America updated their top 100 prospects after the draft, and Rock Chalowski checks in at number 5. That's right. Baseball America has placed Rock Chalowski in the top 10 of all prospects across baseball. He is now, according to Baseball America, the top prospect in the White Sox organization. Braden Montgomery checks in at 24. Caleb Bonnemer is 29. The Sox are tied with the Dodgers and Twins for most prospects in Baseball America's top 30. Sox fans, join us at the ballpark on Saturday, August 8th, as the White Sox take on the Guardians at 6:15. Pretty big game. Come early as we honor legend Ozzie Guillen with the retirement of his iconic number 13 jersey. 15,000 fans in attendance will receive an Ozzie Guillen replica jersey presented by Verve, a credit union. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Ozzie. When we come back, we'll check in around the majors before we bring you Landon Tomey and Jim Tomey right around 1 o'clock. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The home of the Sox. This is ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. Sox fans, there's still time to win a one-of-a-kind experience this season. Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win the Chicago Sports Ticket Package. The winner will receive 2 tickets to a White Sox home game, a Chicago Bulls regular season home game, and a Chicago Fire regular season home game. Enjoy a full season of Chicago sports. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. Quickly, before we take a brief timeout and get you set for Landon Tomey and Jim Tomey, some news from around the major leagues regarding Aaron Judge. Of course, the prodigious mammoth slugger for the Yankees is dealing with a rib injury that has kept him out for some time now. And the Yankees have said that Aaron Judge is feeling better right now, but he's still not fully healed, has not been cleared for baseball activities as he deals with a fractured rib. So the Yankees are still kind of playing it by ear. Their hope is that they're going to be able to have him back before, obviously, the start of the playoffs, but they still need to have some more imaging done before he can resume baseball activities. I note that because, of course, what the White Sox and Yankees could be doing, I mean, it could be where we're talking about the Yankees as a potential playoff matchup for the White Sox down the road here. So obviously worth keeping an eye on. And the Bronx Bombers always said that Judge would have some where he would be reevaluated at the All-Star break. Obviously, that has come and gone, and they still don't have exact clarity regarding that. So that's the latest regarding one of the best sluggers in all of baseball. Let's quickly pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
All right, when we return, Landon Tomey, the son of Hall of Famer and former White Sox slugger Jim Tomey, was drafted 34th overall. He met with the assembled media last Sunday at Wright Field and was really interesting. Very impressive young man at 18 years old. Of course, a local kid, as well as he attends Nazareth Academy in LaGrange Park. So we'll let you hear from Landon and his dad, Jim Tomey, about the cool moments for the father and son being selected by his favorite baseball team. We'll share that with you when we come back. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
It's simple. The ESPN Chicago app.
Jeff Meller back on White Sox Weekly as we're getting set for White Sox and Blue Jays coming your way. Pre-game officially starting at 1:30. But as I always like to say, Saturdays, it's just extended pregame coverage of your favorite White Sox team, as we do it each and every Saturday, 2 hours prior to the pregame. White Sox and Blue Jays, game number 2 coming your way today, after the White Sox beat the Jays 12-4 last night to start the second half of the season. The White Sox are in sole possession of first place, a half game up on the Guardians, who had their game postponed yesterday due to poor air quality. They're playing a doubleheader today in Cleveland, and the Guardians right now are trailing the Pirates 2-1 as they head to the fourth inning in that one. All right, Landon Tomey, the son of Jim, who has grown up in the local suburbs of Chicago, grew up rooting for the White Sox. And so, of course, it was a great joy for him when he found out that the White Sox selected him with the 34th overall pick last Saturday. And that was where we began asking him what it felt like to be drafted by the team that his dad played for.
Oh, my. It's a dream come true. I mean, I've been growing up coming to games here since I was a little kid, and to be able to hear my name called by the White Sox, it's really a dream come true. I'm just ready to get to work and do everything I can to help this city and help this team. I mean, I grew up wanting to put in a banner in somewhere because my dad never got to. So that's something that I dream about every day, is to be able to win a World Series, and especially for this city. I mean, that's the dream. So it's, I mean, that's all I can say. Dream come true. Absolutely.
What was your dad's reaction, and what did he share with you about what it's like to play for an organization like this?
He was so excited. I was saying that was probably the most nervous I've ever seen him yesterday. All our family, I tried to keep as relaxed as possible, even though I was feeling those nerves too. But when we got that call and he told me that we were going to be a White Sox, I mean, It was a flood of emotion. I mean, it didn't really kick in until I saw Mr. Goetz and Mr. Shirley and Mr. Lally and Mr. Watson today. So being able to see those guys and thank them for this opportunity was awesome.
It was rumored almost a day in advance that this might happen. Did you have an inkling yourself?
I had no idea the night before. I saw the trade. I saw it on Twitter at 10 p.m. at night, and I was like, this could be a possibility, because I knew they were interested. But the next morning, we didn't really know until the 24th pick. That's when my agent called me and told me that I'm going to be a White Sox. So, just like I said, flood of emotion, absolutely.
Landon, what do you have to do to make yourself an MLB player?
Yeah, I really want to lock in on the nutrition part. Just getting out there and be able to play every day is something that I'm so excited to do. It's been my dream since I was a little kid to just play baseball every day and be out there in warm weather. Sometimes it's hard in Chicago to get ground balls every day or be able to hit outside every day. So being able to go down to Arizona and being able to go down to Charlotte this week and really lock in on training every day is going to be, it's going to be very beneficial. Absolutely.
Is this the number you're going to be wearing, 25?
Whatever number they give me, but I mean, 25 would be pretty cool, because that's the number I've worn my whole life. So, I mean, that would be a blessing. Absolutely.
Do you have any memories about, you know, you're in the video when your dad hits his 600th. I think your mom was expecting you when he hit his 500th, right?
Yeah.
I mean, more so the 600. Do you have any memories of, you know,
I was so young that I don't really remember a lot of it. I just remember kind of growing up watching the highlights when I was a little kid and trying to model my game after my dad. Growing up trying to model my swing after him. So just growing up seeing highlights, I never really remembered watching him play too much in person, but it's pretty cool to have a guy with that knowledge in your house every day.
We asked Will because his dad played too. I mean, how much of an influence has your dad been on you?
Oh, it's been awesome. Just kind of the biggest thing he's taught me is kind of the mental side of being able to go out there and trust the process, and being able to put something in the basket every day, whether it's an RBI, stolen base, anything like that, and then the basket's going to fill up at the end of the year. So having that mindset, kind of that positive mindset going into every day, especially going from high school now to pro ball, I know I'm going to fail a little bit, but being able to kind of have that positive mindset is going to help a lot. That's what he's taught me.
Outside of the mindset, any mannerisms that you have picked up on the field that resembles your dad?
It's funny because he actually mentioned sometimes I do the bat where I point my bat out to center, and it's kind of just natural. It's not something I really took up after him, but it's something that I feel like is kind of genetic. So it's pretty cool when he shows me pictures of me doing it in high school. So it's awesome.
What did you kind of learn about yourself this your senior year and just kind of going through this whole entire process as well?
Yeah, I mean, this process was, I mean, you dream of it as a little kid to be able to be looked at by pro teams. I mean, even going to the combine, that was such a special experience for me, being able to talk to all those teams. I just learned so much about being a leader and being a teammate, being a great teammate, because that's something that I really want to take in these next few years, is being a great leader. So I had great mentors in Jaden Fowski, who's with you guys too, and Cooper Malamazian, who's now transferred to Florida State now, but those guys really took me under their wing, and that's something that they kind of really taught me, is that leadership role.
Have you talked to Jaden since you
I have. I FaceTimed him yesterday, and he was hyped. He was screaming on the phone and everything, so he was super excited. I'm I'm so excited to be able to be reunited with him and being able to play with him again. So
you knew 10 picks before the pick that you were going to be with this with the White Sox?
I did. So they called me and they said that there's a chance if you're available at 34, they're going to take you. So when I heard that, I was like, oh my, this is really a dream come true to be able to play in your hometown. So it's awesome.
Yeah, were you worried that somebody at 32 or 33 may take you?
There was a little bit of interest in those picks, but I mean, when I heard White Sox, I mean, it's been my dream to play for the White Sox since I was a kid. So I was like, oh, please let it be the White Sox. Please let it be the White Sox. And when I heard my name on the TV, I was so excited.
Does it feel a little different walking back into Wrigley Field now that you're part of the organization?
It does. I was telling my mom and my dad that this is the first time you walk into a stadium and people know who you are, other than my dad. So it was pretty awesome today. This is such a cool experience, being able to be on the field, be with you guys. So I really appreciate it.
Since you play a lot, have you been really up to date on what this team is doing right now and that you could be part of this sooner than later?
Absolutely. I mean, this is such an exciting team to watch. How they've been doing this year. I mean, all the guys, Vargas, Murakami, Montgomery, all those guys. I mean, I love to watch them. I mean, the White Sox are always on in our house. So being able to watch those games and look at the leadership roles that these guys take on is pretty awesome.
How would you describe your game and what you bring to the organization?
Yeah, I would just say an ultra competitor, someone who's been around the game since they came out of the womb, honestly, and someone that's a pure hitter, does damage to all fields. And I think once I get out there in Arizona and take ground balls every day, I think I'm going to be that excellent defender one day too.
And Arizona is obviously the next step, but when you think about, you know, your first foray into pro ball, what does success look like in your mind? How will you gauge whether or not this was a successful first look at it?
I always like to say, for me, I don't really like to chase numbers. I just try to compete every day, compete every pitch. And having that mindset this year, I really saw success with that. So being able to kind of continue that mindset into next year, whether I get sent out to wherever it is, wherever affiliate, it's just having that mindset of going out there and competing and knowing that I'm the guy and trusting in the work that I put in the off season. That's something that I really want to carry this next season.
Any pressure that comes with having the last name Tomei, how have you handled those expectations here?
No, I honestly see it as a privilege, to be honest. Having the knowledge, like I said earlier, having the knowledge of him in the dugout this year and at home whenever I need to call him and kind of ask about my swing or ask about something on defense, he's always there. And having that, obviously there's those chirps in high school and whatever, but it's definitely a blessing to have someone like that in your house every day that you can talk to and learn from.
Who cried the most yesterday?
I would say my mom. I would say me and my mom, I would say, and then my dad. My dad was, I mean, over the moon, I would say. So it's, we're all so excited to be a part of this organization and being able to get to work and hopefully move up fast. So that's the goal.
From the boy whose dream came true, Landon Tomei, to the proud papa, Jim Tomei.
Jim, you accomplished so much in your career. You're a Hall of Famer. How does it compare to seeing your son get drafted yesterday?
I was always able to keep it together as a player. This is tough. This is so special. What a day. Just to watch your son go through that and his name be called it's a dream come true, right? Like you watch them as kids. They grow up. They love the game. And then as they love the game, they go through this process of just wanting to play. And then when you're in that moment yesterday, you don't really know if that'll ever happen. And when it does, it's so special. It's hard to explain, but what a great moment.
How have you seen him develop over the years as a player and just as a person?
I think as a player, just the transformation of, you know, time, you know, they gain strength. Right. You know, they're young. You know, like when they're really young, you just kind of like as a dad, you throw BP, you know, you do all the little things. You don't try to overthink it. I think the main thing is to keep them loving the game. And when they love the game, and if the skill set is something that's there, then as they grow a little older and their strength and the the maturity happens, that's when you start seeing the improvement. And that's, I think that's the case with Landon.
Jim, we asked Landon a little while ago if he had an inkling, even a day in advance, when the team made the trade. Did you have any kind of feeling even then, or when did you feel it?
When they called. When they called. You never assume anything, right? Like, the game is that's what's great about the game, is the game, sometimes opportunities like that happen. I think when that happened, you think, okay, could this align? And then when it did, it was really special. It was really nice.
Were you any advice? Sweating at all at the previous picks, if he could go play somebody else and not the White Sox?
No. I mean, I think being around this spring and watching a lot of teams scout him and come out, you always think, okay, where's this going to go? And then when your name is called, when his name is called, you that's when it hits you, and like, wow, this is pretty real. This, all that work you put in is something that paid off.
Now that he's drafted, any advice that you've given him that you maybe wish you would have known as a young player?
Just understand the process. You know, I think at each level, it kind of gets harder, right? You go from high school, then you're going to sign. Then I think the biggest thing is to really, and Charlie Manuel was great with us in Cleveland, is his term was always know thyself. If you know who you are as a player and you work on those things skill set wise and keep improving, even on the things that you aren't as good at or not as talented at, you have to identify them and still work on those things as well. Understand your strengths, work on some of your weaknesses, and just keep playing the game. You know, it's going to throw the roller coaster ride, as every player that will go through this. But having a good support system, having a wonderful organization, that when you look across the board, what we've done here is we've supported our young kids. We've really poured our hearts into them, and they've poured their hearts into us and how they play the game. Look at the way our club is playing right now. And that's what's really, I think, special about where the White Sox are headed.
How have you tried to coach him and parent him? Yeah. Those are two different, often colliding perspectives. How did you try to manage both?
I think the biggest thing is to know that you're a dad first. You know, and sometimes there's times when you just kind of don't speak. You know, understand that there is those roller coaster rides, and when it's time to work, you know, the relationship that you build as a father, though, you have forever, you know. And that's, I was so fortunate to be able to be around for 4 years, watching him win a state championship at NAS as a freshman, and then just continue to watch the maturity and the love of the game. Lee, Coach Milano, you know, I really commend him because he's built a great culture at NAS. You know, obviously, look at where Jaden, what's happening with Jaden right now in our system. He's built a great culture, and these kids, you know, they respect the game. They just want to keep improving and love it.
If what I can it? Ask you in your special advisor role, I know you saw Rock Chalowski.
Yeah.
What kind of player are the Sox?
Loved him. The first day I seen him, he hit two home runs, and that's obviously great. But I think the biggest thing for me is when I met him, when I was around and listening to him, how he loves the game and how he pours his heart into the game. You know, you can, as a scout, you can step back and you can watch a guy. But when you really get to know them or speak to them in an interview, like, I think with Rock, that's the thing for me, is I feel like he's going to match extremely well with this group of guys in here. And that was a big, we all have our thoughts, and that for me was one of the biggest things I loved about him.
Is that rare in today's game? Like, talk about how much he loves the game and just talks baseball. Do you see a lot of that in today's game?
Yeah, I do, because I think the resources we have now, the information, I think, you know, even the young kids, they, when they get an opportunity to speak with a big leaguer, like, they want to make their game better. And that's why our young kids, I think, are developing, you know, nicely, because the veterans of our game, the kids today in our game, are listening to what they're saying. And they're also, they're using the resources of the great things that we're giving them, and they're developing. It's really, the game has grown and it's heading in a wonderful direction.
Jim, what was it like for you and your wife with Landon driving up here, having you put on the uniform and walking on the field with you?
There was a moment you had to step back and go, is this happening, right? Is this really, you know, it's really cool. It is.
Thank you.
It can be tough for any dad to be objective about their son's athletic ability, but do you remember a time when it like really hit you that, hey, he's got something special here?
Watching him, I think, his junior year, and then to watch him progress like throughout the winter, and then when I was throwing BP to him and balls were coming like back at me a little harder, like when he was a freshman, I don't know if anybody, but he hit me in the face. So I had to go, like, I had to actually, like, I had, like, he hit me right under the eye socket. And then as I learned quickly to get behind the screen. And then as he developed, it's like, the ball is coming off the bat much harder. And, that was one thing I think you learn. And as they grow, like, okay, the strength is now colliding with some of this skill set.
The proud papa, the Hall of Famer, Jim Thome, reflecting on what it felt like having his son Landon drafted by the White Sox 34th overall last Saturday. When we come back, we'll wrap it up, this version of White Sox Weekly, right here on the home of your White Sox, the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The legendary AM 1000, the home of the Chicago White Sox.
White Sox fans, get access to the best seats at the best value and lock in a 2027 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups and exciting new promotions. Enjoy flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2027. Thanks to Tristan Peters and Jesse Rogers for joining me here today. Thank you, Jake Santos and Brendan Riley. We'll get you set for White Sox and Blue Jays with the pregame show starting next, right here on your home of the White Sox, the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.